All right, everyone, and we're live. Happy Easter. Today, hanging out with you, we have Josh and Tom. I know I sure enjoyed mine. Josh, Easter, was it good?
Absolutely. He has risen. I love it.
Do you have any, what's like a Mercer Easter family tradition that you guys do?
I mean, my wife doesn't like ham as much, but she knows I love it, so she can't resist making it for me. I love a big thing of ham. We had turkey too. You know, it's the feast. You know, I like to talk. I love feasts. You know, maybe I eat a little bit too much, but I remember when talking about, you know, because we got done with Lent, which is fasting, and then we went on to the big feast of Easter, and even this Friday we get to eat meat on Friday. And someone asked St. Francis of Assisi. We always think of him as like some sort of hippie or whatever. That's not true. But one of his brothers is like, well, wait a minute now. Christmas is this year was going to fall on a Friday. He goes, should we observe the Friday, you know, penance and not eat meat on Christmas Day? And St. Francis says, no, this is such a jubilation that even the walls should eat meat. And he took meat and he literally put it on the walls. You know, it's like, so, you know, this is how we should celebrate, by having a joyous feast of great meats. And I love eating, so I'm overweight. What can I say?
Take that, vegans. St. Francis said meat on the wall.
Exactly.
So, yeah, happy Easter to everyone in the chat. Thank you for joining us live. We're doing this every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 ET, although we did not do it this Monday. I was enjoying that with Easter Monday with some family. I do have a story of my time at Easter, if you'd like to hear it, Josh.
I'm all ears. Let's go.
So Easter tradition with my in-laws, they take Easter egg decorating very seriously. And there's some real heavy hitters lined up in this competition. So what happens is, I think we were doing this either Friday night or Saturday. We were dyeing eggs, and they have acrylic paints, stickers, Sharpies. People were using props. Like, it's a big deal. And I'd say there's probably like 50 eggs submitted, different categories. And there's cash prizes or like gift cards for like the winners of this. So, you know, it's pretty serious. And I've been married a little while now. I've been over there a few times for this competition. And so I tried my best. I sat down. I'm not the most artistic guy. Tried to decorate to the best of my ability, try to win some money here for my family, put some bacon on the table. And so you get to the competition and I submit my eggs, and there's one aunt, I'm not going to name her, she knows who she is, who is way too artistic and is just like blows everyone away.
Every year.
And she made like a Spider-Man egg. There was like a Humpty Dumpty egg that was like on a brick, and they made like little legs for it. I mean, it's just like over the top crazy.
Brings her A game every year.
Every year. She always makes out. And so basically what they do is they don't allow her to win all of the prizes. They're like, they DQ some of her eggs, even though they probably should have won. They're just like, okay, you can't win the prizes. And so what they do here is they look for eggs that look like they were made by children so that they can award a child a prize, basically. So everyone kind of wins. Not to say, you know, we're not a participation trophy bunch, but they're like, oh, we'd like, you know,
want to encourage future artists, right?
Exactly, right. And they want to encourage, like, you know, a 10-year-old maybe wins a prize, get some confidence. And I'm not exaggerating. After they disqualified two of this aunt's eggs, they looked at my four eggs for like 5 minutes, basically being like, hey, this looks like it was made by a child. And I'd like to give them some points. They were really like, wow, this one's really, someone did a really good job on this one. They really tried hard. Great job. Who made this egg? And they turned around and I kind of had
little to like, Tommy.
I had to like head down, like raise my hand, like, yes, like that was me. It was not made by a child. It's made by a 26-year-old. and so I sheepishly took my $5. But they said next year they're going to make a category, eggs made by adults that look like they were made by children. And I plan to make out.
You're a child at heart, Tom. That's what works great about this. Yeah.
So, Dom Higgy, remember? Dom Higgy said he was being entered in the church. I assume you've done it, my friend.
Yeah, at the Easter Vigil. That's the time to do it.
Welcome in. That's so exciting. I know there's really nothing like being at a vigil mass and watching people come to the church. It's just like such an emotional, raw, spiritual experience. It's so cool to be a part of. Shout out to anyone at the Easter Vigil masses.
Well, I talked earlier about Christmas, you know, the absence, and then, you know, Easter, the big two feasts, right? And so Easter is this time where we get to celebrate people like this who enter the church, it's so cool. And it's just the right time to do it, right, for Easter. The other holiday, Christmas, though, it is believed there was, I don't remember who was the person who said it, but like it is, someone had a vision about this, that God himself, God the Father, releases the most number of souls from purgatory on the day of the birth of his son on Christmas Day. And so it's like Christmas Day, Easter, these are the two things. You know, when we lament that some people only go to church on Christmas and Easter, better that than nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's build on that. And let's hope that they start to see that this is really, you know, this is for us, you know, 52 weeks a year. This is a great thing to be a part of, this family. So,
yeah, people always say, like, planting the seed. You're never sure when it will actually be fertilized, but maybe your first encounter with that kind of real beauty of God is at like an Easter Mass that you didn't even really think you were going to go to, or a Christmas Mass. And I think this is a good segue. I'm going to call an audible here. So Tammy Peterson just entered the church. And this has been really amazing to witness from afar. And I think it's been very inspirational to a lot of people for many reasons, because Jordan Peterson and her really are very respected intellectuals. And I know that Tammy Peterson's been battling cancer, and that's been a really tough journey for them. And that she really dove into the rosary and said the rosary was just instrumental in her conversion. She was officially brought into the church over this Easter. And there's a really, I say we just start the conversation with this clip. I think everyone can appreciate it. So this is going to be the Jordan Peterson, Colm Flynn interview.
I loved my wife from the moment I laid eyes on her when I was a kid. And if you love someone, it hurts you when you see them deviate from the thing that draws you to them. And since she's pursued her efforts at enlightening herself more thoroughly, and this investigation of Catholicism has been key to that, she's much more who she is. And that's great, because I love who she is, and so the more of that, the better. And it's the same thing you want to see. If you have a child that you love, you want to see them become everything they could be, and that's a lot. If they become everything they could be, that's an endless unfolding. And so there isn't anything better than to see that in someone.
Okay, I have to say this. Major kudos to Colm Flynn, the interviewer, because this answer is so good, and he was almost about to step in, and he realized, no, I'm going to let him cook a little bit here. It was beautiful. So many times you get these interviewers that just interject. It's like,
gosh, it's so
especially
annoying.
When I watch a sports game, you know, like just let the viewer participate in this moment.
Tony
let him, up. And that was discipline. Great call. Great interview. You'd pretend. I recommend everyone watch the full thing. It's great stuff.
Yeah, from a editor perspective, I just was. It was such a beautiful clip when they cut to him and he's kind of like. And then they go back to Peter, so I was like, oh my gosh, like I've totally been in that spot before. But so it's kind of talking about this investigation to Catholicism. And he actually went to the Easter Mass. He got blessed. I saw a picture of that too. Why do you think people have been having such a strong emotional reaction to her conversion and the potential conversion of Jordan Peterson?
Well, I mean, her story is an interesting story in its own right, of course. And it's great because she's had to go through a lot of suffering, as you mentioned, you know, with the cancer, and that the rosary provided a lot of help for her, you know. But, of course, yeah, obviously a lot of people are intrigued by this notion that Jordan Peterson is one of the most influential intellectuals of the day, and his wife is just converted to Catholicism, and how is that going to impact him? How could it not impact him in some way? It could have been a negative impact. And there's that point in the interview where, like, oh, no, is he going to talk about, like, you know, he almost like he's teasing us, like, well, I fell in love with her for this reason, and then she's changing, but she's becoming more who she is. That was so beautiful. Whether or not he converts or not, he loves her. And that is so beautiful to see. And he's not someone who's afraid of the truth. And so I'm excited by what, you know, his journey. And he's got such a wonderful curiosity. He asks questions which are very thought-provoking and very interesting. People love his interviews because it's not formulaic. He really does bring a lot to the conversation. And, you know, who isn't excited to see what's next in Jordan Peterson's life? I'm going to certainly pray for him. I'd encourage our audience, you know, to pray for Jordan Peterson, obviously to continue praying for his wife, as now she's part of the team. So welcome home. That's awesome.
Yeah. I love seeing the compilations of people kind of ribbing Jordan Peterson for his very unique speaking style and like saying bucko and make your bed, like that kind of thing. It's the best. But you mentioned something and I completely agree with this. There's a real sincerity to Jordan Peterson that is infectious. I don't know if it's because I think he's from Alberta. I mean, I know he's Canadian for sure, but that rural part of Canada, you kind of get the fun accent. He's like he's very intellectual, but similarly like salt of the earth. He sacrificed so much professionally, obviously, by taking the stand on a lot of Canadian laws. Right. So he's just a compelling figure to follow. But I've actually appreciated in other EWTN spots where he's articulated better than I think a lot of our faith leaders have, unfortunately. And we'll get to Gregory later. That the Catholic Church, two things. One, it's making things, in an attempt to try to reach people, it's making things easier or watering things down. It's not providing the fullness of the truth. That involves sacrifice and suffering and hardship. And right. So that, bingo, correct. I think from an outsider, right. That's a great observation. And then two, the church's priorities as of late, it seems, have been a little bit skewed. Like, right. I think when he was talking about Pope Francis, he was saying, like, all you hear from Pope Francis is climate margins, climate change. He's like, none of that matters in reality if there's no focus on the salvation of souls, on the salvation of your soul. I'm like, yes, exactly. So he's kind of had a couple of those moments where I've been like, he's making really articulate points about our faith that I think are worth considering.
Even if he hasn't yet officially joined, which he may not, it's like he gets it. You know, he understands. Oh. He understands what the Catholic Church is proposing to the world. Like, this is what we believe. And he's like, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that, but like, why are some of the people who are supposedly, you know, the bishops and the priests, why aren't they getting it like this? Like, totally. Am I missing something? And I'm like, Jordan, I'm with you. I'm right there with you. I do wonder sometimes. And we need help. Come on in. For jump sure. in the boat.
First off, Erica signing in the chat. What's up, Erica? We miss you. Hope you had a good Easter. She still watches us. I'm impressed. I thought she would want a full break from the Loopcast, but
she's taking notes and let us know everything we do wrong. I can tell you that much right now.
Erica signing in the chat. So we have the positive news. I mean, I'd be remiss. I was funny. I got a text from my mom, like, how long can the Loopcast be? You guys will have a lot to talk about. And this is true. And I want to emphasize Easter, Christianity, Catholicism, it's all so much larger than a lot of the secular nonsense going on. Christ has already won the victory. That is the foundation of everything we're talking about. But it is important to address things being done by the second Catholic president of the United States and church leaders such as Cardinal Gregory. So we're going to run a little bit into an Easter recap here. So I mean,
and before we do that big Easter recap, let me just throw one little thing out there for you. So, you know, he is risen indeed, obviously, right? Easter. Mm-hmm. And you know, you get every time we have Easter come around, we get the people coming at us and saying, oh, give me a break. It was all just a hoax. And I thought Babylon Bee's video last year on the hoax, that was so great when they had these guys dress up as the apostles and talking about, yeah, it's a hoax. Let's go. And what's going to happen? Oh, we'll get riches. No, we'll be brutally murdered. It's going to be awesome. It was such a great video. Kudos to Babylon Bee. And they really brought that to life. So I'd encourage anyone to watch it if they haven't seen it. But I'm speaking about Charles Colson. He's an evangelical leader He passed away about 10 years ago or so. And he was, you know, a lot of people, I talked to him, oh, you've heard of Charles Colson? Oh, yeah, he's, you know, evangelical leader. I'm like, well, do you know about his past? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you know, he was one of the guys that was involved in the Watergate scandal. He got caught and he spent time in jail. That's why his whole ministry became prison fellowship. He wants to minister to people because he found Jesus in prison. And once he got out, he wanted to try to bring Jesus to as many prisoners as possible. That was the whole impetus behind it. And we go, oh, well, that's kind of an interesting story. I go, but here, you don't understand the half of it. He had one of the best quotes I ever heard about the resurrection. And he takes the whole idea that it's a hoax and blows a hole in it right away. I love this quote by Charles Colson. I know the resurrection is a fact, and Watergate proved it to me. How? Because 12 men testified that they had seen Jesus raised from the dead. Then they proclaimed that truth for 40 years, never once denying it. Everyone was beaten, tortured, stoned, and put in prison. They would not have endured that if it weren't true. Watergate embroiled 12 of the most powerful men in the world, and they couldn't keep alive for 3 weeks. You're telling me the 12 apostles could keep alive for 40 years? Absolutely impossible.
I mean,
I love that. It's just amazing. I mean, if you're the apostle John and you're, you know, deserted on this island and you're like, what happened? Well, the one apostle killed himself, you know, and then the other guys, let's see, Bartholomew skinned alive, Peter, he crucified upside down. Am I going to stay, you know, like, they're coming for me. They might try to kill me. Do I really want to do this all for a hoax? Yeah, maybe it's not a hoax, people.
Yeah. I'm on team no hoax for sure.
Exactly.
So, okay.
He is risen.
We got to get in a little bit of the Easter wrap up. So, Easter, a.k.a. Trans Day of Visibility, according to the second Catholic president. So I hope you all had a great Trans Day of Visibility from President Biden. There's a lot of interesting elements to this, okay? So my personal favorite so far is that President Biden himself denied that he made Easter this day, even though it was all over his Twitter. He said it was on March 31st is what I made it, not Easter. And it's literally in the text, like March 31st, Easter this year. But
his point, Tom, is that I
know his point. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, just for audiences, like the Trans Day of Visibility is always on March 31st. It just so happens to coincide with Easter this year. That's their explanation for it. But it's like, you know what? That doesn't mean you actually have to honor it and respect it that day. And you know what? Why can't you have the movable feast? We've been around on this holiday for almost 2,000 years. Maybe you're the guys who should move it, you know?
Well, like, Josh, why do you need an executive order to acknowledge something that already exists if this is so important? I mean, it's crazy. But the messaging from the Spanish Twitter account for the White House, no mention of Trans Visibility Day. Very interesting.
Maybe because they're hemorrhaging Latino voters, right?
You get Happy Easter, and then you get Cesar Chavez, Hugo Chavez, sorry?
Cesar. It should be Cesar, yeah, because he said a lot of quotes about him. He was an advocate for migrant rights, but you know, by the way, here's a little dirty secret in this. As much as the Democrats like to celebrate Cesar Chavez as a hero for migrants and labor, Cesar Chavez was totally against illegal immigration.
Oh, yeah. I saw something like Cesar Chavez would have been at the border with a gang of militia basically ready to defend it. So, like, these people are, of course.
He understood that it hurts wages of lower-income people. I mean, it's terrible. So, and it's obviously exploitation of the migrants. It's bad news.
Right. See, so it was Trans Day of Visibility, Easter, and Cesar Chavez Day, which Nancy Pelosi also was talking about. I was like, who would have thought that Easter would be this war zone of bizarre day celebrations? So that happened. And then I get to thinking, too. So based on Biden's argumentation, it's like, oh, it's always been the 31st, even though he's now assigned his day to it. Let's take a look at the 2024 calendar for a visualization of every LGBT holiday in 2024.
It's like a Jackson Pollock painting, spray paint all over the place.
That is insane. I mean,
like, is December the only month that's not molested? Like, Golly.
It's like January and December are the only days not touched. So we'll get to this later, but Trump was talking about...
Wait till they make December groomer month or something. They'll add more, I'm sure.
Trump was talking about making November 5th Christian Visibility Day because that's when people will be going to the polls. It's just awesome. So I saw that there was a liberal paper that wrote up his speech in Grand Rapids. We'll talk about it more later. I saw in quotes, however, the date has been designated for trans people awareness since 2009, but this year it coincided with Easter celebration and conservative politicians and media have seized on conjunction, critics say, to whip up resentment against the LGBTQ community. What day is not one of these days? Like, I was like, what day can we even have at this point? I don't know. So
yeah, actually, could you just move Easter to January? Then we won't touch it.
Exactly. Dude, he's also a Catholic president. Like, has anyone talked about how shameless this is, that this is a Catholic president making it a feather in his cap? What also bothered me, too, was the announcement himself. They're now using language from the Bible saying, like, you are made in the image of God. And then they never bring up the very next line of that passage. He made them male and female.
Right.
But they're happy enough to highlight what parts of the Bible they want to highlight, but then cherry pick and cut up to support a cause that's literally mutilating people. It's hard to wrap your mind around how shameless and not Christian this is, all in the name of picking up a few votes, I guess, instead of emphasizing, I don't know, the Christian holiday that's been around since the resurrection of
Jesus.
Wait,
so say the line that from Genesis that they quote again.
The line is, he made them in his own image, I believe. And then right after it is, he made them male and female.
Okay. I get – just say the sentence that they quote again, though. I'm trying to understand it right.
He made them in his own image?
Shh. No more God. That's enough. Stop right there.
That's enough. Stop the tape. So while this is going on, Biden was celebrating Trans Day of Visibility, which is an obvious diss on the furry community everywhere, because Easter is kind of like the biggest day of the year for furries. I mean, dressing up as an Easter bunny, come on.
Oh, now. My goodness.
So I don't know.
You and the gosh.
A little bit disrespectful, if you ask me.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
So Cardinal Gregory goes on Face the Nation, okay? And I watched this whole interview. It was a half hour long. Some great interfaith dialogue that MSNBC was
like Easter
was
penance.
Having.
Oh, yeah,
my gosh. I know. It literally was. So it was him and Episcopal Bishop Marianne Buddy. A half hour interview. They touch a number of different topics, but the one that was highlighted was Cardinal Gregory being asked about President Biden's Catholic faith. So can we get that clip played?
In the case of the president, do you get a sense that his regular attendance and adherence to the faith resonates with American Catholics?
I would say that he's very sincere about his faith, but like a number of Catholics, he picks and chooses dimensions of the faith to highlight while ignoring or even contradicting other parts. There is a phrase that we have used in the past, a cafeteria Catholic. You choose that which is attractive and dismiss that which is challenging.
Or, as Thomas Aquinas would say, you allow your conscience to guide you.
Is there something on the menu he's not ordering, in your view?
Well,
so to speak?
I would say there are things, especially in terms of the life issues, there are things that he chooses to ignore, or he uses the current situation as a political pawn rather than saying, look, my church believes this.
In the case of the president, do you...
Now, there are a lot of people on Twitter that were like, oh, this is actually cool that he's calling Biden a cafeteria Catholic. And to me, I just feel like that's the soft bigotry of low expectations. I mean, like, it's like as Chris Rock would say, it's like a dad bragging, I take care of my kids. You know, you're supposed to. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, and Cardinal Gregory kept making a point about how, well, he talks about his faith and this and that. you know, I don't want to say I don't care about his faith, but it's not as important as what he publicly avows. He's calling for child murder, and that is an egregious human rights violation. You don't need to be Christian or Catholic to believe that child murder is bad news. And it's not about, like, well, what does he personally think about the issue? Like, he's calling for the murdering of babies, and he wants me to pay for it. Like, this is an egregious crime, and it needs to be illegal. It's not like he's picking and choosing, oh, I'll take the ham, I don't want the potatoes. Give me the cafeteria Catholic thing is a way to, I think, it doesn't even do any real help here. And the fact of the matter is, you don't even need to be Catholic to understand children should not be murdered, you know, and that God made man male and female. You don't have to believe in Genesis to know, wait a minute now, for, I don't know, for the last 6,000 years, we've had men and we've had women. Hello, this is how we come. Like, it's funny, like, actually in the 1970s, we started beaming out image into space in case, you know, in case there's extra, you know, aliens out there somewhere, and we have this drawing, and it's like a nude man or a nude woman or whatever, and like, this is how we look like. We come in two kinds. Imagine if we did that today. There'd be like 52, right? Like, how many can we fit on there? And be like, what is going on here?
So the interesting thing too is, so not only, this is on the same day that Biden announced Easter Sunday, Trans Day of Visibility, using pieces of the Bible to make that. So that's happening. And then also he's making abortion the centerpiece of his reelection campaign.
Yeah, he's not ignoring it.
No, he's not ignoring it. Exactly. It's not even ignoring it. It's he's making it the central promise of his campaign. He's talking
number
about
one.
You don't know the rage of women. Everyone deserves the right to whatever he's calling it, reproductive health. Like, so.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Tom, you said that they don't understand the rage of women. Why is Biden talking about women? I thought he didn't even know what a woman was.
Facts. Exactly. So that's another hurdle. That
contradiction
we gotta cross.
On contradiction.
Yeah. Another hurdle. But it was funny. So I watched the full interview in this Episcopal bishop instantly cut in and was like, but it's possible to be a public practitioner of the faith, but not require everyone you lead in your country to be guided by the precepts of your faith. And then she said, well, he seems really sincere and he always stays till the end of funerals for people that he goes to as like kind of the justification of his character.
Wow.
And this Episcopal bishop also quickly interjected and said, you can have an abortion and be Christian. So we already kind of know, like, the Episcopals are kind of off the rails. Well, it's a female bishop, not that we want to get on that. And then she kind of gets dunked on. Cardinal Gregory gets dunked on by Aquinas. Like, instantly this lady gave a more intellectual response than him of being like, well, he's kind of a cafeteria Catholic. So disappointing in a lot of ways.
Again, it's like, what does it matter? Okay, so he stays at funerals and he shakes hands and he's really gives hugs and he's nice. Like, so he's a decent person and maybe Trump is kind of a jerk. It's like, at the end of the day, I want people to be nice and I don't want people to be jerks. Fine. But like, the guy calls publicly, shouts for abortion. He wants children to be murdered and he wants you to pay for it. Like, that is horrible. I don't care if he mows his lawn and waves to people. Like,
no,
he uses his turn signal and he pets kids. You know, oh,
you're
wow.
making a really interesting point. And I think the funny thing that I saw for people saying, wow, Biden's such a good man, is when he was crying when he heard On Eagle's Wings, when he had all the Jesuits at the White House in St. Patrick's. I was like crying because it's not a good song. But anyway, people are like, oh my gosh, he's such a good man. That's why I think we run into problems when we treat our elected officials, especially on the president level, as like a purity test of character. Because essentially what Democrats are trying to do is like, oh, well, Biden's this nice old Catholic man. I mean, even the way they set up the question in the interview, this is how they set up the two options. Because like, oh, we're talking to these faith leaders. We want to hear what Christians have to think about the election. One man is selling Bibles that have the Bill of Rights in them. And then the other man
is a little cheesy,
right,
whatever.
Which I think is dumb, fair. And then the second option is a man who goes to Mass every Sunday, worships with Cardinal Gregory, and is the second Catholic president. What would you say to people on the thing? And it's not about, like, this could be the nicest guy ever, project the nicest guy ever. Go look at Gavin Newsom. But it's about what gets done, what actions are taking place,
you know,
and the team they bring with them. And so if you look at the team around Biden, I mean, half of them are trans, first off, so personnel is policy, go ahead. And then the people that Trump put in positions of power versus the people that Biden put in positions of power, tell me which is more Christian. Do you feel, as a Christian, do you feel like we're in a more Christian society now or a less Christian society? So little of that has to do with, wow, Trump made a mean comment about Rosie O'Donnell. Like, it has to do with policy.
Yeah, I mean, think of it this way. Like, imagine if the CEO of a pornography website started going to mass on Sunday, and you didn't know who, let's say, who he was. He just starts going there, and he's got the ashes on Ash Wednesday, and he shakes hands with people, and he volunteers, you know, to give out donuts or whatever, at, you know, after mass. And like, oh, that guy, this guy Jim is a really nice guy. Like, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm the CEO of a porn, you know, website. And you're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? You make money exploiting, you know, men and women in this nefarious way, which is totally against church teaching. And you're like, well, wait a minute. I'm a nice guy. I go to a church and I say nice things. Like, you would say, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't going to church, like, change the way you behave and what you do publicly? If, for example, some guy owned a sweatshop in, let's say, you know, Southeast Asia, and he was employing 6-year-old kids to work 12 hours a day. And you're like, hey, Bob, what is the, I just found out you own this factory like in Jakarta, and these like 7-year-olds are working around the clock to make, you know, t-shirts. How could you do that? It's like, hey, I go to church. I love my faith. I pray the rosary. We wouldn't accept that as an answer. So why is it that the president of the United States can get away with that and publicly call for abortion or, you know, trans and all the other radical gender stuff? You know, why aren't we saying, well, now, wait a minute, buddy, if you're going to church and you pray the rosary and you get the ashes on your forehead and you proclaim that you believe in Jesus, then you should not be in favor of child murder. Like, yeah. Where's the disconnect here?
Well, I was laughing because an even more obvious example, like the sweatshop's a little bit more ambiguous. But if you think about like gang leaders, like Colombian drug smugglers or whatever, like probably profess to be Catholic, probably show up to mass, or like the Italian mobsters of the day that were like
murdering
people and going to mass. It's like,
yeah, guys, you're not getting a funeral, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't think it's too much to expect public officials that profess to be Catholic to act in a Catholic manner. He had an interesting, Cardinal Gregory was talking about how religion, organized religion, used to set the moral compass, and then the politics, like the political, would take that lead from the religious as kind of the moral view. Who knows if that's actually true? But he's saying that now it's like the political is setting the tone and doesn't have that moral compass. And I just think, like, so Cardinal Gregory is basically Biden's pastor, essentially sheep. For him to go on that show with a straight face and say, well, he's kind of a cafeteria Catholic, but we worship together and I give him the Eucharist, is another example of like, you just don't take your authority very seriously, right? Like, there would need to be concrete actions to say, listen, like, this is wrong. The Catholic Church, Jesus Christ, is the moral authority that you need to follow as the political. And if you're not doing that, me as the shepherd, I need to say, you cannot receive Jesus in this condition. And instead, he kind of goes on and makes like, well, he's a little bit of a cafeteria Catholic. And people cheered that on. And it's like, you're not seeing things as they are. Like, that's the reality of the situation,
it's like,
what I just said.
Tom, it's like that clip that you shared just last week or so where you were watching Cardinal Arinze give that, you know, someone asked him the question about whether or not politicians who support abortion should be able to receive communion. And he answered that question so perfectly, more than I've ever heard anyone ever answer it. Who's the best? He goes, you don't need the opinion of a cardinal in the Vatican. He said, grab one of the children that are going to go receive First Communion. Ask them, hey, this person supports killing of babies and, you know, wants to go up and receive Jesus and Holy Communion. You know, is that okay? And they'd be like, the kids would be like, what? Of course not. like the 8-year-olds get it. Like, no, like this is an unspeakable crime. Of course you wouldn't be able to do that. But apparently it's contentious or controversial. Yeah.
Oh,
I don't
it's
know.
A little bit rough on the life issue. I don't know. And it's like, go get a toddler.
Right. I mean, and again, the point I've tried to make over the years is that the bishop's response to a politician who supports abortion is nowhere near, they should be more scandalized by it than they are, you know? And I keep thinking to myself, if a politician, let's say from Alabama, was running for governor and said, I want to bring back segregation, the bishops rightfully would be apoplectic and they would lose it. Like, this is horrible. No Catholic could vote for this person. That is an unspeakable thing. Horrible. We had such a bad history in our country of slavery and racism. This would be a massive step backward. And they would be right. But shouldn't they be more upset that we have a president who professes to be Catholic and supports abortion, which kills babies? Isn't that far worse? Why aren't they as scandalized? That's the question.
Yeah. Agree. So I have a little segment. I'm calling it Mirth Monday. We're a mirthy bunch over here. We like to have a good time. We like to be happy. And so I saw this hilarious video.
Is this Mirth Monday, but like Orthodox edition a few days later? I mean,
that's right.
It's Wednesday.
Orthodox Mirth Monday. I mean, I was out on Monday. I was trying to decorate eggs and get sympathy.
I went live without you. Did you know that?
Yeah, how did it go?
No, I'm kidding. I didn't.
So I think, Jessica, I might need you to screen share the...
I'm delighted to be joined by a member of the Chinese community as I apologize for using the phrase Chinese whispers. I appreciate that this is deeply offensive to the Chinese. I completely understand why they went totally mental. I'm delighted to be joined by a mental health campaigner to witness my apology for using the phrase they've gone mental. I can see some of you are surprised that I'm apologizing, but no. Gone were the days when getting an apology out of me was like getting a fiver out of an Aberdonian, eh? I would like to apologize to the largest Aberdonian community, the Aberdonians. I do understand that Aberdonian feelings are important. I'm surprised, actually, that our diversity officer didn't make that clear to me. Honestly, sometimes around here, it's like the blind leading the blind. I would like to apologize to Scotland's blind community. I hear your concerns, and I promise you they will not fall on deaf ears. I would like to apologize to the deaf community. I would like to say sorry. When I realized what I'd said, I had a fit. I apologize unreservedly to all of the epileptics in Scotland for my use of the word fit. I completely understand why you've got a bee in your bonnet. I would like to apologize to anyone connected with bees or the wider bee community. Bees, indeed, are a vital part of society. I tried my best to get a statement that wouldn't offend anyone. I really did. But do you know, when me and my advisors get together, honestly, it's like two bald men fighting over a comb. I would like to apologize to Scotland's bald community, of which I am a member. I would like to apologize and exonerate myself. Chief, I'm sorry. Chief, you're forgiven. I was particularly pleased with my final apology because I could apologize and accept the apology at the same time. I do like to kill two birds with one stone. I would like to apologize to the entire avian community for my cruel and insensitive words. I'm sorry.
So good. The thing is,
apologies. Sorry, he apologized to you and the ball community as well.
I accept his apology, but of course, in the woke crowd, they demand that you apologize, but they don't give forgiveness. That's the thing that people need to realize. You're never forgiven, and it's never enough. You're made to grovel and beg, and then you're expected to carry the torch for their DEI woke stuff, but you're never truly forgiven. And in fact, there's nothing you can do, like unless you become the biggest cheerleader ever. So like Jimmy Kimmel, like said egregious stuff. He went in blackface like 25 years ago. But so long as he's carrying the torch for the regime, it doesn't matter.
So do you know why I showed this video? Other than it being hilarious.
Well, isn't it something going on with J.K. Rowling, right?
Yes. So there is a new Scottish law about hate speech. And it went effect on Monday, and it outlaws, in direct quotes, stirring up hatred. So stirring up hatred definition is threatening, abusive, or insulting behavior towards race, ethnicity, or any of the following characteristics: age, disability, religion, or perceived religious affiliation, sexual orientation, transgender identity, and variations in sex characteristics. So J.K. Rowling was challenging the act by saying that a man is a woman, about a Scottish transgender person. And truly, this law is so insane that like you could get jail time for any of those comments. So this someone made that video, and it is funny. It is a little reminiscent of Monty Python, but they made it as a way to like make fun of this hate speech law. Like it actually is insane and crazy, and you could do jail time for this. But yeah, like thank God for the First Amendment, and please don't let it go. But
yeah.
All right.
I mean, the First Amendment is definitely under attack here. I mean, there's a lot of people in this country who'd love to get rid of it, unfortunately.
So if you go to Scotland, keep the insults to a minimum. Okay? You can only speak in serious terms. I would last like 2 seconds in Scotland. I'm not even exaggerating. It'd probably be, I'd be arrested probably on site.
Well, I mean, I know that's what J.K. Rowling, she's trying to you know, intentionally provoke it so that she can fight the law. And the left is totally mad at her for this, but she would have the ability, she would gain enough notoriety to challenge the law and put it at bay. So bless her for her courage. I'm not saying I agree with everything she says, but on this, she's outstanding. She's a great advocate. So let's go.
J.K. Rowling's stock is rising after being the author of like the book that was banned in every Catholic homeschooling household that I've ever been a part of, Harry Potter. And now she's on the men are men and women are women train. So stock rising. Who knows? I was definitely not allowed to listen, read or watch Harry Potter.
Well, I mean, I'm not like you. I'm not like a teenager. So that came out when I was an adult, and I'm like, I don't really care about this. You know, whatever.
Yeah, but don't you like Star Trek, though? Come on.
I do, which is for adults instead of like Star Wars and Harry Potter.
It's for men of culture.
That's right.
Although, I've heard you talk about Star Wars. I'm not going to expose all of your fandoms, but...
Well, like my wife says, like, you're such a nerd. I'm like, yeah, right? You know, like, why is this, like... Yeah. I never said I wasn't a nerd.
That's the play. Just own it. No one should tell you any differently. So I think we have one more thing before we go into the Twilight Zone. So Trump gave a speech in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, just down the road from me.
Just vintage, vintage Trump. I mean, he's been on a heater lately. If we could show his newest...
Going to win the White House, and we are going to save our country. We're going to save our country. And what the hell was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day? Such total disrespect to Christians. And November 5th is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody has ever seen before. Let's call it Christian Visibility Day, all right? I've just come from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I was proud to receive the endorsement of the police.
So, yeah, yeah. He was in Wisconsin for that one, but he was kind of going along the blue wall from Michigan, Wisconsin. And dude, I mean, so good.
I mean, what was amazing about that is, like, he did something that just – this is one of the things that people don't understand about Trump. He does things that, we're just – Republicans aren't supposed to do that. And this is almost, like, obvious. Like, okay – he's asking Christians to vote for him. And, like, that sounds like a no-brainer. I mean, like, Democrats ask blacks and Latinos to vote for them, right? So if Christians are an important part of the Republican Party's coalition, it would only be natural for the Republican candidate to say, Christians, please vote for me. But in the past, you know, did Mitt Romney ever do that? No. Maybe he's afraid he would emphasize that he's Mormon. Did John McCain? Heck no. John McCain ran away from Christian conservatives as much as he could. And what did it get him? Oh, he lost. You know, George W. Bush would talk about marriage and he would talk about life a little bit here and there, but he never made an overt pitch. He would talk about his own faith in hopes that Christians would get the idea, like, I'm a Christian, vote for me. Whereas Trump's like, hey, are you Christian? Vote for me. I could use your help. Like, it's refreshing. And then we could say, well, hey, if you want our vote, like, here's some things that we would like. We would like you to call attention to the fact that, you know, churches are being attacked. 407 attacks since 2020. In fact, just this week, Joe Biden tweeted, Donald Trump isn't saying anything about, domestic violence going on, you know, political violence. And it's like, well, wait a minute now.
Oh, political violence, yeah.
Excuse me. Political violence, there's been 407 attacks on Christian churches since 2020. And Biden, you've been silent. Trump has not been silent. He has spoken out on this, and he's encouraged Catholics to remove Biden from office because his Department of Justice isn't doing it much of all on this issue. And he says, Catholics are being attacked. Their churches are being attacked. Trump is calling attention to this. Kudos to him for that.
Yeah, I'd have to say it's almost kind of nice and refreshing to be treated, to be courted as a part of a coalition. So the key, in, which seems such an obvious, right? But like the key is you're Christian, so you are obligated to vote for me. It's like, look, I know that Christians are a valuable part of this coalition.
Right.
What do you want? What do you want from a leader? I definitely have not heard that from Biden. And so if we treat it as like a transactional, like, hey, what is ailing you? What's been going on? I think there's a lot of Christians that I personally would say, like, being Catholic is the largest part of what I would consider like my identity or makeup,
right?
The most important part. So if someone came to me, and there's a lot of other Catholics out there that would be like, listen, you know, what are you concerned about? I'm concerned about my church is getting attacked. I'm concerned about transgender policies everywhere, conscious rights, all those things. Pro-life stuff, of course.
Right.
Like, pro-life stuff. Just come to me and ask. It seemed so. Josh, question then. If it's so obvious, are there just like political consultants leading people away from that, being like, no.
Oh, yes. Go good.
And so, well, Trump, of course, just saying like, screw that. Like, I'm going to do what I think is right, and then being right.
Just there's a beltway mentality even amongst people who consider themselves conservative or Republican. So like we announced recently, like on the latest package for aid for Ukraine, we're like, Catholic vote's like, I mean, why are we still spending a bunch of money? Why are we going to borrow money from China to give money to Ukraine? And people are like, well, Ukraine needs to fight against Russia because, you know, look, I understand Russia. I understand Ukraine needs to fight. I'm not saying they can't fight, but why do we have to be entangled in this? We can't afford it. Why are we borrowing money from China to help them fight Russia and fight a proxy war? That doesn't make any sense to us. You know, and people are like, well, are you a stooge for Putin?
Of course.
Do you not care about Ukraine and people dying? It's like, wait a minute. I would like to do something about our southern border. I'm worried about the tens of thousands of people who are dying from fentanyl abuse. I'm concerned about the exploitation of migrants and how these cartels are totally exploiting them. I'm concerned about that. And so you get this beltway mentality. I don't know if it's just a bunch of defense money, you know, from defense contractors or why they're so obsessed with spending money in Ukraine. But Mitch McConnell is the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, right? And he's like, well, this, you know, we got to do this Ukraine package because all these defense contractors are all these congressional districts and it's good for jobs. Like, really? That's your argument? Like, the argument to me would be like, we should try to help Ukraine out because, you know, we said
we
don't
care about humanity.
We don't, yeah, we don't want you to die. We don't want you to be extinguished. Right. And we asked you not to get nukes after the fall of the Soviet Union. And so we would promise we wouldn't let you get annihilated from Russia. That would be the argument to use. Not like, well, you know, it's good for business. It's good for jobs. If we kill, you know, people and build these tanks and these missiles, that's ridiculous. And so, well, you start to understand, like, for a lot of the folks in the Beltway, even the so-called Republicans in the Beltway, they're focused on, well, the defense industry, this is jobs and all that kind of stuff. Whereas people are like, well, wait a minute now. And it's for them, it's unseemly, like, oh, those Christians, they just want the votes and all this stuff. And you want, look, you talk, Tom, about it's kind of nice for Trump to actually try to court Christian voters. That's a major step in the right direction. That's outstanding. Like the bar was so low, I'm just happy when Republicans don't treat Christians like pariahs.
Exactly.
Let alone try to court us. Like, he's saying, hey, I want to try to win. I need a team. Jump on board the Trump train and we'll get some things done. I'll try to fix this problem with the church violence. I'll try to pass some pro-life legislation. Right. Let's go. I'm like, this is great.
What did you say earlier? Soft bigotry of low expectations?
That's right. And so I think that was one of the things that when he first ran in 2016, I think he was like saying to Christians, like, you know, why aren't you asking for more? You're so used to getting the absolute pittance. And it's like, well, we've had, you know, Republican leaders like George W. Bush, who said, hey, I pray, so, you know, let me bomb all these other countries. And then you have, like, you know, John McCain is like, I mean, you annoy the heck out of me, and I want to bomb all these countries, so shut up and vote for me. And it's like, it kept getting worse and worse. And it's like, finally Trump comes along and says, hey, I'm not trying to pretend I'm a saint here, but, like, maybe you could join my team and we could work together and get some things done. And Christians are like, wait a minute, he doesn't hate us? He actually wants to work with us? Like,
and we won't bomb any foreign countries.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's not bad.
The other funny thing too is, so you mentioned like these Republicans, basically the bar so low, not treating us like pariahs. And then we get the Biden administration weaponizing the FACE Act to throw pro-lifers in jail. Or like spying within Catholic churches, using the FBI to do that. Like, so not only is it not being treated like pariahs, but actively persecuting Catholics and Christians now under this administration. So it's like, the bar is crazy low. It's funny you talk about that. I've not thought about it in that way. I've been used to being literally persecuted by an administration for so long now. I'm just like, well, this is the way it is. Like, imagine a time where that wasn't the case, where Christians were actually put as a priority instead of having three quarters of the calendar trans days of whatever. Like,
right.
It'd be kind of nice to have some respect, I guess, again. And we don't have to expect this, like, low. You do not have to live this way. I completely agree. So,
I mean, I guess I'm reminded of the fact that, you know, I was telling my friend the other day, remember, Spain was once a caliphate. It was completely taken over by Muslim invaders. The entire Iberian Peninsula was Muslim, except for a tiny little area, like basically 100 guys in the mountains way at top. And like, this is crazy. Like, we need to turn this around. And a group of like about 100 guys, they just started fighting back. And it took like 700 years. And they finally liberated the continent from this Muslim oppression. And the final battle, the final year, 1492, it took forever. Here's the thing people need to remember. You see all the garbage going on, all the abortion. You see the porn books in kids' schools. And you're waking up and you're like, what is going on? This is crazy. We need to fight back. Yes, we do. And it's so great to have you in the battle. Let's go. We got to fight back. Guess what? We might not win in this lifetime, but we know Easter reminds us Jesus has conquered death. We know he's going to win in the end. And we know from like what happened with the Reconquista of Spain, it might take hundreds of years. Final victory might not happen in our lifetime, but guess what? I'm going to fight like the Dickens and I'm going to do my best. And I'm going to try to get my kids excited about this. And we're going to fight for what is good, true, and beautiful. Let's go.
Erica, I'd say that's an A+ if we're grading Josh on that one. That was gas. Twilight Zone, Josh, you are first.
Oh, I love this. I mean, it's like, this is truly a Twilight Zone. So here's a story about a church that is doing a renovation, okay? And who's upset about this? The lefty Catholics.
All right, now, Jessica, can we scroll up on this so we can see the headline here? If not, Josh, you could just read it.
A Latin Mass community moved in. Then they wrecked a historic Vatican II altar. The best is Sean Daly is this super Catholic lefty. He goes, trads are assholes and vandals. This is a sacrilege.
Wait, isn't historic Vatican II altar a little bit of a...
I mean, historic, dude. I mean, there are people that were alive before this happened. Is that historic? I mean, that's like when you find out, like, gosh, 9/11 is in the history books. There's history books. I mean, I'm not even that old. How does this in the history books?
So, Josh, he said that
the Institute of Christ the King Sovereign Priest should rename itself Institute of Henry VIII. He said it invoked the church in England did to crush all these altars and churches in England. This is ridiculous. When the fact is, here's a church in Cleveland that the diocese was basically like, we got to do something. We can't have all these buildings. The number of Catholics is being reduced. Should we sell it to the Baptists and maybe they can do it? And Christ the King is like, well, wait a minute now. What if we just let us take this over? And we'll do Latin masses here because you can't advertise them anymore because Pope Francis made it illegal to advertise. And we'll just do Latin mass here. How about that? And the diocese is like, hey, problem solved. Great. And then they move the altar and the lefty Catholics are like suddenly got a new religion. Like, this is, to me, so hilarious. Decades and decades of trashing beautiful traditional Catholic churches. And suddenly the Catholic lefties are like, You're breaking the altar. You're turning things down. Don't you care about tradition? I mean, this is so hilarious. I love it.
So,
I mean, you can't make this up. Oh,
Josh,
my gosh.
If I could, because this is funny to you, and I truly wasn't alive and do not remember this. For people who are younger, this story is funny, and to be explicit, because there was a long period of time in the church where people would tear down statues, right? Like there's a huge issue to like modernize or whatever.
No, absolutely. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's a book called Recovation by Michael Rose, and you should read it. It's actually about my parish. This consultant comes in and says, we're going to change all these things. And we saw what this woman did to other churches and just completely took beautiful churches and made them look like gymnasiums, made them look like crap. And I was not here when this happened, so I'm not trying to take any credit. The faithful Catholics in my town of Petoskey said, no, you're not doing that to us. And they fought like the Dickens. And the amount of changes that this crazy lady was able to make were minimal. I mean, it still would have been better if it had been left alone. But they saved face. They made a few changes, and it does. It did look better before. But I saw what this woman had done to other churches, and it was so disgusting. And the people in this community in Petoskey rallied, and they made sure that St. Francis Xavier's Church remained beautiful. And you know what happens to this day? People love coming here and visiting the church because it's beautiful. And people are like, I want to have our wedding there. Well, I did have my wedding there because I'm a parishioner. It's a gorgeous church. But there's like, oh, if you want to get married at my church, you're not a member? Okay, well, hold on a second, because we need to make sure it's available for the parishioners. It's a beautiful church. People recognize its beauty. But for decades, in the 80s and in the 90s, the lefty Catholics were trying to throw out statues left and right. And people in this town and other towns across the state of Michigan were rescuing these statues. And my wife's family, I'm very proud of it. They started a Marian Center in Petoskey. What they became is a repository for these statues that people were trying to get rid of for 20 years. And so, you know, here we had statues all over the place, 30, 40, 50, 60 statues. And for all throughout the 80s and 90s, people were trying to get rid of these beautiful statues. And now what happened? We're seeing a number of these John Paul II priests that are being ordained, and they're starting to become parish priests. And they're like, well, this church looks kind of ugly. We need to do something. We need some statues. And so these statues that we were holding on to, we gave back to these priests. And it was a beautiful thing. We're not the only ones to do this. There's other places across the country. My friend was involved with the Sacred Heart Ministry in Columbus, Ohio. She did this too. And, you know, getting these statues back to these churches, it's a beautiful thing. But yeah, like a lot of Catholics who, you know, they had no idea that Vatican II was supposed to be getting rid of statues, but the church was teaching a false teaching for a while. Not the church itself. I'm not saying that the church remained true, but the people that, you know, priests and even some bishops were like Weakland in Milwaukee. He was horrible. They were recovating all these beautiful churches, and they were like, oh, we're beyond these simple devotions like the rosary and all that stuff. You know, come on, that's old school. And anything old was thrown away. And it's like, you know what? This makes it beautiful. The thing is, I always like to tell people when it comes to beauty, I like to talk about the city of Pittsburgh. The city of Pittsburgh was very wealthy 130, 40 years ago. And the steel barons, you know, Carnegie and all that stuff. And all the buildings in that town were just gorgeous. And the churches were gorgeous too, by the way. And then in the 1970s, the steel industry collapsed. And that's when I think architecture was getting really ugly in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But Pittsburgh didn't have any money back then. And so the buildings just kind of stayed the way they were. And then by the time that late 90s roll around in the early part of the 21st century, all of a sudden, I don't know why I'm not on the screen anymore, but I'm going to keep talking about it. What happened is, all these buildings suddenly became retro, and people are like, oh, this is really cool. We like this. And I just find it kind of funny. Like, if the Catholic Church would have just, you know, stayed true to what it was, people started realizing this beauty lasts, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. But you delivered that well on a dark screen. But, it's funny, too, with this article. This is used as a smear against Institute of Christ the King, which is hilarious. Like, this is just such an obvious attack of a historic Vatican II article. If anyone understands Institute of Christ the King, Institute of Christ the King, their entire purpose is to go into historic cathedrals and restore them and to upkeep them. There's one in Detroit, it's gorgeous, St. Joseph's Cathedral or
it's a shrine, right?
Shrine, yeah. And they literally got a PBS grant to go do this because of how old, ancient, beautiful, like we're talking like Gothic
stained
style.
Glass.
Oh my gosh, just stunning places. And of course, well, what's their greatest sin, Josh? They celebrate only in the traditional Latin Mass.
Right.
So
they
were welcomed into Ohio to basically restore.
Do what they did in Detroit, right?
Exactly, to restore a beautiful church. I mean, if anyone goes and checks out this church, gorgeous from the outside. And this quote-unquote historic Vatican II article, of course, does not fit in what the Catholic Church did for, I don't know, 2,000 years before Vatican II happened. In the style of worship, the high altar, how everything looked. So, of course, they're going to restore it back to this. That's what they do. That's what they're invited to do. So,
but, of course, we know the Catholic lefties had in their mind they despise the Institute of Christ the King. They made up their mind they don't like this group, and this was an opportunity for them to attack them, and that's what they did. Totally. And, in fact, I looked at this article, and I'm like, wait a minute, is it April Fool's Day? But they decided to publish it the next day because everyone wouldn't believe it otherwise.
They would
have known. Wait, suddenly the Catholic left is upset that they're, you know, taking down an altar? Oh, no. Like, you guys are so full of baloney. Like,
hey, if they didn't have standards, wouldn't have standards at all. Double
they didn't
standards.
Have... you can't even say the line.
Can't even say it. Okay, Twilight Zone, I am up. So before we play the clip, there's this guy, Coleman Hughes, okay? He's going on The View. This guy, Coleman, He's well known for being a black intellectual, that his argument is that we want to get to a colorblind society. Some people may say that's reminiscent of Martin Luther King Jr. Many of the left say that's racist now. But he is he's an independent, has done a lot of interesting things. He wrote this book called An Argument, The End of Race Politics. And it's actually funny, Josh, it reminds me a lot of what you say about how race relations were on the rise up until we get to about Obama. And
right.
It just totally nosedives. And everyone can kind of feel it now. It's just race baiting is almost, it's just in the air. It just feels like it's everywhere.
Right.
And before we play this clip, the best hypothetical that I think shows his position well, so he gave this TED talk. It's similar. It's on this argument for a colorblind society. And his main argument is that we should be targeting socioeconomic classes as opposed to races in terms of when we make policies to help people. It's more about poverty and rather about your inherent skin color. And so the example is the hypothetical of a high school band, and the band director has to make choices about who to make each chair. So I was in band in high school. If you weren't, first chair would be the top part, second chair would be the second, and you all do these auditions to see who gets each part. And so the teacher wanted to be fair, so she does auditions for chairs behind a curtain. So therefore, blind, you don't see who's behind it. Therefore, you won't have potential prejudices. Yeah, you can't play favorites. And so the host kind of responded with this hypothetical and said, well, minority kids have disadvantages. So if it is colorblind, she wouldn't be able to adequately address the disadvantages of minority races. And so Coleman suggested to this hypothetical a different solution. Keep the blind audition, but invest in impoverished communities earlier to get kids instruments at an earlier age to actually address the root cause of what the disparity is. The disparity is not because black people are worse at the trumpet. It's because people didn't get a trumpet earlier because they were poor, which I think is pretty
right.
Logical.
Right.
So this argument all seems pretty logical to me. I'm not even going to prep this. He goes on The View, and if you're familiar with The View, it shouldn't surprise you, but even this was a little surprising to me. So go
going
ahead,
into the lion's den, man.
Play the clip.
Your argument for color blindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
He's not a Republican.
Well, so how do you...
He's never voted for a Republican.
You've said that you're a conservative.
No.
No, you did. You actually said that in the podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I said I was a conservative.
He's not.
Yes,
he's not,
yes you did. So, but my question to you, is, how do you respond to those critics?
Okay, let's let him answer.
First thing I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro. That's yes. from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was.
Yes.
And it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged, a broad class-based policy.
But he also says okay. you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says it's
yes, he does.
Okay, well, everyone should go read the book Why We Can't Wait. Let's not get sidetracked by that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been co-opted by anyone. I've only voted twice, both for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an independent, I would vote for a Republican, mm-hmm. probably a non-Trump Republican if they were compelling. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any evidence I've been co-opted by anyone, and I think that that's an ad hominem tactic people use to not address really the important conversations we're having here. And I think it's better, and it would be better for everyone if we stuck to the topics rather than make it about me.
But
with
I want to give you the opportunity to respond
yeah,
to the the criticism.
I appreciate it. There's no evidence that I've been co-opted by anyone. I have an independent podcast. Mm-hmm. I work for CNN as an analyst. Mm-hmm. I write for the Free Press. I'm independent in all of these endeavors, and no one is paying me to say what I'm saying. I'm saying it because I feel it.
That's awesome to see.
Ice cold. Sonny Hostin truly is one of the most racist individuals I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, I mean, these other people are calling you a charlatan and despicable. I mean, I'm just letting you know about that.
Look in the mirror.
Gee, thanks. Thanks for letting me know.
Well, I love that. So what I love most about this clip, and in the View interview, it's like a 12-minute segment. He does a good job of laying out his arguments for that he makes in the book for a colorblind society. Sonny Hostin, of course, her problems with that is she wants to make everything about race, and your problems are inherent to your race, and everyone else is racist, and that's why people have disadvantage. Yada, yada, yada. She like it's hard for her to comprehend a solution beyond that. We're just stuck in the mud there. And he exposes so adequately the ad hominem attack strategy. And Josh, you see this a lot. I see this all the time. It's the classic, well, critics are saying, and then you say exactly what you want to say about someone's character to try to assassinate them or link them with the public pariahs so that you can discount their argument. And of course, it's such bad faith arguing because it's not addressing the actual arguments put forth by someone. It's trying to character assassinate them using your own things by saying critics, a.k.a. Sonny Hostin.
Right.
And he just did such a good job of like, all right, let's put that aside. Let's get back to the arguments. What you just did is an ad hominem attack. I'm like, yes, that's exactly what it is. So it's like a good tool to have in the toolkit when you guys are like when anyone is trying to watch an interview or read an article, whenever you see the term critics say or some are saying, it's often a journalist's attempt to inject what they want to say to try to ad hominem attack someone. Almost always. There's very rarely do I see it done well, especially from people like The View. But yeah.
Well, I mean, and we get that a lot, you know, because we're a Catholic organization. We talk about things and people say, well, what about the sex abuse crisis? It's like precisely because we had the sex abuse crisis, that's why we want to protect children. That's why we don't want these porno books in schools. And we want to make sure, you know, that we don't, you know, abort people in the wombs. And we don't want kids to be pumped with all these hormones and change their sex, all that kind of stuff. It's precisely because we care about the innocent and we learn from the horrors that happened in our own story. Yeah, obviously. So, it's just...
Yeah. I really hope as a society that we're able to advance beyond, and he said it in the interview, viewing yourself, your main identity as your race, purely from a, I hate to use the word progress because it's obviously so sort of progressive, but how are we supposed to like live in harmony if you were to think of yourself from kindergarten? He brought up a book, Woke Kindergarten, that's like telling people about all their intersectionality, all of their oppressor dynamic relationships at kindergarten. If you were going to tell that to a kid, how would they interact with a kid of another race? Like, we live in America. It's a multicultural society. Isn't the point, like, the objective that we could live in harmony with each other in a place that promotes peace and that everyone would be able to, like, treat each other with respect? It just seems like it's an intentional division. I don't know. It's come from activists, and it's really dug a hole in everyone's collective consciousness right now. But I think we should aspire to that colorblind society personally.
Right. And see, the point that he made on that program was that if you want to try to alleviate, these gaps and these disparities, it's better to base it on, let's say, income.
Right.
You know, like, let's, if we help out the bottom 20% who are disadvantaged economically, then they can get that, as you, like with the band example you make, then that kid is able to start music much earlier if he wants to, because we're eliminating that, you know, that gap. In other words, if you want to try to help end some of these disparities, don't have it so that you admit people into college based on race, do it based on income. Why would it be that, you know, the son of Michael Jordan or son or daughter like a Michael Jordan, why would he get an advantage over a poor kid from, you know, the Mississippi Delta or Appalachia?
Right.
Like, why? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Trump tapped into that for sure.
Yeah. So
but,
it's like,
but you, sorry to interrupt you, Josh, but the important point I think you made in there too, you can change your income, and income does fluctuate. You can't change your race. So to make policies, like, no one can change the fact that they're white, or no one can change the fact that they're black. You could change whether or not someone's rich or poor. That's not like some immutable thing that is a part of you. So by focusing on something that everyone knows you cannot change and making policies based on that, it doesn't seem like there's even the opportunity to move forward or backwards. Like,
but the thing is,
going to be different races.
What he said on this program is, why don't we have programs that help and advance people who are in that bottom tier economically that could really use help? Why don't we base our programs on helping people on that, on income? And the reason why the Sonny Houston and everyone else on The View didn't like that is because they want to support the race hustling industry, because there are people who make money fomenting views. If you look at it, the attitudes on race, it's not necessarily just Obama, although Obama accelerated it for sure. If you, you know, I'm Gen X. I remember this, like, in the mid-90s or whatever, and I'm like, race relations were getting a lot better and better. And I give credit to the baby boomers for this. And then things turned around. I think part of it is social media. Yes, I think Obama's part of it. But I think part of it is that you get into your own, like, bubbles on social media, and people can pop off about something. And, you know, this is just an example of how we've always been treated in this country. And things get blown way out of proportion. And the media pumps, you know, jumps right on board with it. And there's the whole Michael Brown, you know, raise your hand, don't shoot.
I see it in every direction too. Like,
yeah,
the
exactly.
Amount of times I've popped on social media and seen, like, black people beating up one white person, and then, like, white people beating up one black person. And it's like, you could go your whole life without social media and never see that. But everyone in America got to see those two videos probably in the span of, like, a day. And, like, of course that would change your perception of how you see people in general, but especially races.
So,
not in
you
a
know,
positive way.
So, you know, your views are being skewed because you're being served up content, you know, by these social media companies that are getting money off the clicks, you know, and there are people like the Al Sharptons of the world who are intentionally making things worse. Their kingdom grows when they divide us.
Totally. Totally. Completely agree. Well, this one was a lot of fun. Hope you guys had a good Easter. If you want to give us a little Easter present, maybe you could subscribe, like the episode, subscribe on YouTube. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review. 5 stars if you please. If you guys would like to email in, loopcast@catholicvote.org for mailbag. I've been a little bit behind in that, but I will be getting to that. And if you want to support the show, loopcast.org. If you want to join the Champions Club, that is the best way to help the show. Help us out, chip in.
And there's going to be a new prize. If you sign up for the Champions, you're going to get something, a little prize in the mail in about a month or so. So sign up now so you can be one of the first people to get it. It's kind of neat. We got a new book coming out.
I was going to say, are you going to say it or not?
Yeah, I'm going to tease a little bit, guys. We'll tell you more about it in upcoming episodes. But you know what? Fix it today by joining the Champs.
Here, and it's worth it because Erica wrote a chapter. Or she wrote a couple chapters, right?
She did write. She wrote a chapter. She's great.
I mean, just on that alone, I think that's worth
the Well, the biggest donation. Thing isn't just that she wrote it. She was in charge of the whole thing. All kudos to she. You know, Brian and I helped out a lot, too. But Erica did a tremendous effort to making sure this book was great. And so we're looking forward to putting that out. And if you want to get this book, we're going to mail it to every champion. So join the champs. You'll be the first one to get it before anyone else can.
Do we have a title?
We do. For God, Country, and Sanity.
Oof. Okay. The cover art's pretty sick, too. That actually, yeah. I just want to have that in my frame. It's a pretty sick.
Hey, why don't you get it up there for Friday? How about?
Ooh, okay. Send it along. I appreciate it. Also, I like cut my hands because I finally drilled this into the wall for those joining on YouTube. But it's not going to fall on me, which is a huge plus. But yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate you all. We love having you guys in the chat. Thank you for joining. Thank you for commenting in. And we're praying for you. St. Thomas More, Our Lady Guadalupe, and St. Fidelis, pray for us. And we will see you guys on Friday. Peace.